Hey, true crime besties, welcome back to an all new episode of Serialistly. Hey everybody, welcome back to an all new episode of Serialistly with me, Annie Elise. And today we are talking about headline highlights. We have got so much to discuss. And as a reminder, because this is only the second episode this year of headline highlights, I just want to give you a quick reminder that we heard from you. We listened to the people. I like to be a podcaster of the people. And so many of you for the last year or so have been asking that I cross-post this episode onto YouTube for all my YouTube viewers. So headline highlights officially will be out on YouTube every single week. You can, of course, listen to it on the podcast first every Thursday because YouTube likes to be, you know, a thorn in my side and not approve things right away. But so you can listen to it first every Thursday here on Serialistly on any podcast platform you have for, totally free, totally easy. But then it'll also be available the following day on YouTube. So just a little, you know, happy new year, happy 2025 to you. I just gotta say, all you listeners out there have been very active on social media the last couple of weeks, because when I tell you the amount of times I have been tagged in certain videos or shorts or TikToks or cases asking for me to talk about them, I have been like blown away. It has been way more than usual, but it's all the same ones that are trending like over and over and over again that I see so many of you guys want me to cover. So this week's episode, it's going to be just like a tiny, tiny bit different than our usual Thursday episodes. We're still going to go through all the headlines and everything going on in the true crime world, don't get me wrong. But we also are going to talk about two cases that have a crime element to them, but they're not necessarily like your clear-cut murder cases that we normally talk about. And you'll understand as I get into those, but like, for example, I can't tell you, again, the amount of times that I have been tagged on TikTok or emailed or DM'd asking me to cover the Ashley Treviso case. This is like something that's been going on TikTok. It has gone viral. It is wild. And there is some issues with like CPS and some neglect. So I'm going to just like break it all down for you and you can tell me what you think. But that's one of those cases that wouldn't normally be in our, you know, Thursday, I don't know what you call it, roundup, if you will. But also, I put a poll out on Instagram about how many of you want me to do a dive, or not like a deep dive, because I'm not doing a deep dive yet, but like dive into the whole Blake Lively, Justin Baldoni of it all. Again, more pop culture, but it is criminal. There is a complaint and a lawsuit filed. There are allegations of sexual harassment and things of that nature. So it's not in our normal lineup, but so many of you guys have been asking me for my take on it, to talk with you about what's going on. So two of those cases, which we're going to get to, are just, I want to just give you a little warning, you know, they're not in the normal lineup of what we typically talk about. So let's start with our first case this week. And like I said last week, 2025 has been off to a horrific start because there has been a lot going on and no shortage of just scummy human beings. So let me talk with you about this first situation. And it's about a couple, a tale as old as time, amid a divorce, and it ends horrifically. So a married couple who were reportedly in the middle of a divorce were found dead in a murder-suicide. 30-year-old Jennifer and 40-year-old Brandon Sheffield were a couple who was living in Mississippi. They also shared two daughters together. However, on December 28th, they were both found dead inside their home. They were discovered because Jennifer's family had actually called the police asking them to come over and conduct a welfare check. And when they made that call, they also had said that there had been, quote, obvious signs of foul play at the home. I don't know what those signs of foul play were, if maybe they could see something peering through the window. I don't know the details, but police say that once they entered the house, they found a truly, truly gruesome scene. It looked like this couple had died from gunshot wounds, but that wasn't all. Brandon appeared to have shot Jennifer before then shooting and taking his own life. Now, in a very awful, heartbreaking detail, as if it could not get any worse, it does, because while all of this was going on, one of their young daughters was inside the house. Now, nothing has been released yet about the whereabouts of their daughter since their deaths, but there has been a GoFundMe that was set up to raise funds for both of their children. The goal of the GoFundMe is $15,000. But here's where things get a little bit interesting. Not that any of these cases are ever clear-cut or you know things are going to happen or can foreshadow them all the time, but Jennifer was very active on social media. And she documented her life as a mom, her life as an aspiring doctor. I mean, was very just kind of transparent and wore her heart on her sleeve via social media. So much so that just weeks before Brandon allegedly committed this horrific act, Jennifer posted a video on her TikTok. And it wasn't just like any other video that she had posted, but this video was where she once again was wearing her heart on her sleeve and talking about the divorce that she was in. But where we've seen things like this in the past where they are talking on social media about a divorce that they're in or a toxic relationship and almost kind of giving these warnings like if something happens to me or I don't know what to do or I just want to escape, that's not what this video was. She was, yes, talking about their divorce, but she was praising Brandon. She even called him a, quote, incredible father and incredible co-parent. I mean, take a listen to this video.
So, about to be a newly single mom. And I am in the middle of a divorce. My husband is being incredible though. Like really and truly, like we're working together. Everything's great. We're splitting everything down the middle. Like, you know, everything is good. It is a very civil divorce with our daughter in mind. And I really appreciate that. However, you know, I'm going to be a mom, single income right now, and he will be helping with her. He will be supporting her. You know, so essentially, like, I'm really thankful that for that and that I will not have to worry so much about supporting her. However, I will be on a very limited income with buying a new house and, you know, paying a mortgage and all that stuff. So I've never done this before. I've never been on my own before. So if you have any tips, saving money and making money, anything like that, like, I would really appreciate it. Like, you know.
So in her words, although she was not sharing a reason for the divorce, it seemed to be going very civilly. They were splitting everything equally. They were co-parenting. I mean, so how it played out the way it did, it really was shocking to everybody. The chain of events going, you know, from praising him as this co-parent to now an apparent double murder or, well, murder, suicide, you get what I mean. It's kind of hard to wrap your mind around. There are so many unanswered questions that it merely makes you wonder what was truly going on behind the scenes and behind those social media posts in terms of their divorce. Now, on Jennifer's account, the way that she was talking about their split, she sounded very calm. She sounded sort of at peace with the entire thing. Yes, she was nervous to be out on her own and she worried about finances, but it sounded like there was just a complete zero ill will coming from her end. Now, I know that everybody only posts what they want people to see on social media, so we might not have been getting, you know, the full picture. I also know that it's possible that the husband could have been acting like a great co-parent and acting like he wasn't upset or bothered and, you know, really there was something brewing under the surface. But it seems like this whole thing caught everyone by surprise. One of Jennifer's friends also said, quote, "He's never been a violent person that I was ever aware of. I was with her when they met, and I've always loved him for how much he loved her. So it's definitely hard trying to understand something that we will never be able to." So as I said, it kind of looks to family and friends like this was totally just out of left field. And my heart, of course, first and foremost, breaks for these kids because now they are left with no parents and not really a lot of answers either. Now, of course, this investigation is ongoing, so hopefully the truth comes out about what truly went down here. But it is a little bit different than the traditional blueprint we see in a lot of these cases. I have to say, although I wish there was no murder that took place here, I am happy, even though the daughter was home, that this did not turn into a family annihilator situation because we see that way more than I would ever care to talk about again, but where, you know, where they take the kids' lives as well. So in one sense, although I'm angry and upset that this senseless murder even had to happen, I am thankful that he didn't choose to kill the children as well. I don't know if that's just me trying to see the silver lining or what, but, you know, I've seen a lot of bad things. So I'm happy that at least the kids were spared in that regard, although the amount of trauma they're going to have to deal with in their life is just absolutely unbearable. Now, this next case is taking us to New York, and I don't know what's in the water in New York or what's in the sewage line or the subway line. I love New York, guys. I used to live there. But I am just saying, like, I don't know what's going on there right now, because this case kind of reminds me of, like, not only everything that's been going on that's wild in New York right now, but also not New York related, but the pizza delivery stabbing that I talked about just last week, because a woman is being accused of fatally stabbing a postal worker in line at a bodega at like a deli in New York City. And she stabbed him over a sandwich. Now, here's where this whole altercation is just like crazy town, because 24-year-old Jaya Cruz was at a Harlem deli on January 2nd. Also at this deli was 36-year-old Ray Hodges. He was the Manhattan USPS employee. Ray was there to grab some lunch, as was she. That's how these delis, bodegas work. You're all in line. You know, order your hero, which is the sandwich or whatever, and just move along. But according to witnesses, Ray began to order his sandwich, and then Jaya just started yelling at him. She said it was her turn to order, not his. She even tried to step in front of Ray and order before him. She allegedly then spit in Ray's face, which prompted Ray to kind of retaliate, and he threw a plastic water bottle at her, allegedly. But then she just pulled out a knife and began stabbing him. Like, over a sandwich, over ordering a sandwich, which you would be next in line. Like, I know when people cut, it's frustrating, but like, come on here. So people around this whole thing were trying to intervene, but unfortunately, it was too late. After stabbing him, Jaya just immediately booked it. She ran out of this deli all the way to her apartment so fast and, like, so frantic that she left the knife behind that she had used to stab him. Police were then called to the deli, where they found Ray with multiple stab wounds all over his chest, his neck, and his arms. He was transported to a hospital, but unfortunately, Ray didn't survive it. Now, in a heartbreaking detail, which you would see this on some of the video news coverage that's out there, but it's like, these things always kind of make it feel more real to me, and I don't know if that's the right way to describe it, but it just kind of makes you realize how short life is and how quick something can happen, because as he was being transported in the ambulance away from the deli to the hospital, you could see his mail delivery truck just still parked waiting outside the deli. He literally thought he was just going to hop out of his truck, walk in, grab a sandwich, then continue his mail route, not at all knowing that he literally was going to be stabbed by this frantic, crazy customer and lose his life.
All I'm going to say is he was a nice young man. That's it.
You know, I know the guys who deliver mail. And just like that, he's gone. It's very scary. Anytime you wake up, anything can happen. You know, you can just, like they said, it's an argument. So you can just say hello to somebody and you stab. You know, something like that. It's disheartening. To say the least.
It didn't take long for the police to find Jaya, and they arrested her at her apartment. And when they did, and when they started looking into her history, as it turns out, Jaya actually has a very violent history, specifically with knife violence. See, Jaya has been arrested 5 times previously in connection with knives. One time, she waved a box cutter at somebody when she was in Midtown, and when she did, she shouted, "I'm gonna cut him!" She also allegedly played a role in a robbery where she used knives to try to take a man's phone and wallet. So, I mean, definitely a violent history with knives. Speaking back to Ray, the victim in all of this, he's leaving behind family and friends. He was a father of two. He was a great person in the community. He was remembered as a good man, a family man. His brother gave an interview and said, and I quote, "He was an honorable man. He took care of his family and everybody." Another person also spoke out, a man that Ray delivers mail to, who described Ray as really nice, saying that he went out of his way for the locals. And just, again, to think that this man lost his life over a sandwich order, it is insane and so senseless. Jaya is currently awaiting trial, and she's been charged with murder, so it's unclear if she has taken a plea deal of any kind, or if she's even gotten a lawyer yet, or if she has a public defender. I don't know. But this is just another case of something that should never have even happened, and someone who lost their life for really no good reason. So I hope that justice is served, and I hope that the loved ones of Ray are finding peace and beginning to heal. Okay, now the next case I want to talk about is truly insane, and it kind of gives me Taylor Shabusiness vibes, if you are familiar with that case. If you're not, please do not Google it. It'll make you want to vomit, and it will also enrage you, but I did cover it, so you can just search that name and my name, and you'll be able to find the episode. But yeah, her last name was Shabusiness. But anyway, This story is crazy because a woman was reportedly telling her friends that her boyfriend was threatening her with a weapon, and then literally one day later, she was found not only dead, but decapitated. So 32-year-old Craig Allen Nichols Jr. was arrested in South Dakota. This was after three women decided they were going to go check up on their girlfriend. But when they went there, instead of finding her healthy, well, and alive, they found her decapitated. They literally went inside and found her body with no head attached. I mean, can you even freaking imagine? So this all went down on January 2nd, and the victim was Craig's girlfriend, 41-year-old Heather Ann Bowden. Now, the day before her friends found her, as I mentioned, she sent a text message to her friends saying that Craig was threatening her with a weapon. Then, after that text was sent, her friends didn't hear from her for about 24 hours. So the three friends talked to each other and decided to go meet up at Heather's apartment and check on her. But nothing prepared them for what they found inside, because that's when they made the horrifying discovery of their friend's body. They immediately called the police, and the full investigation was launched. I mean, right away. Police quickly got security camera footage from her apartment complex. They started looking at footage from the night before. They were really trying to figure out what kind of monster could have done this. So as they were scouring this footage, on that camera, there were three men, one of them being Craig. They're seen arriving at Heather's apartment complex. They apparently all did drugs together, and then the two men are seen leaving on camera with Craig staying behind. But the two men, who were later interviewed, said that Heather was definitely alive when they left her apartment. So as they continue searching all of this footage, later on the security camera footage, Craig is seen leaving and coming back to the apartment. And in that footage, he's carrying two trash bags. This is between 2 and 6 a.m. And he makes this trip back and forth several times. So then, after searching Heather's apartment, police easily found the trash bag that had Heather's head inside of it. They also found another trash bag with bloody clothing that were labeled as belonging to Craig. Also in the trash bag were three weapons that were wrapped inside a floor mat. Now, I can't even begin to describe the brutality of this. I mean, the amount of force it truly takes to saw and cut someone's limb off, no less their head by the neck. I mean, it is incredibly, not only brutal and disgusting and like just like foul, but it takes an incredible amount of strength. And we don't see this often in terms of, how do I want to say this? Like, anytime there's a dismemberment of any sort, usually it is when somebody's trying to clean up the crime scene. They're trying to conceal the body. They're going to scatter the body parts. They usually have a day or more to take their time doing this because it is so strenuous, and they'll get, you know, sometimes go to a store and buy a hacksaw, different things like that. Then they get caught because we find the receipt, all the things. All to say, because I know that was really long-winded, sorry, is that traditionally in most dismemberment cases, it's done as a method of cleanup, and it's not rushed, and it's not something that happens, you know, very flippantly. However, in the cases in which it happens during a murder and something that is immediately done and not something that takes days, what I have seen, and this is just me, I'm not a detective, I'm not an investigator, guys, but from what I've seen in the cases I've covered, it happens in a drug-fueled state. And that's the reason that I brought up Taylor Shabusiness earlier, because she was like super high on meth when she did the same thing to, she like decapitated her boyfriend and left his head in a bucket. I think she also, if I'm remembering correctly, like cut off his wiener. I was going to say something else, but that's what it is. So the fact that these other two guys who said that Heather was still alive when they left the apartment said that they all were doing drugs together, there's no proof of this. Let me just be clear, but I can't help but wonder, were they doing meth? Were they doing some other sort of hard drug together? Is that what caused this? Not that that would excuse it, of course, but like, it's just, again, such a brutal crime and so severe, and like you're going from like 0 to 60. I don't know, it's crazy. But anyways, let me just continue because I know I just went off on like a crazy tangent, so I apologize. But anyway, so they searched, they found the weapons that were in this floor mat, they found the clothing, they also find Heather's head in a trash bag. And then next up, they searched Craig's apartment, and one of the first things that they found was a pair of shoes that had a reddish brown substance on them. Now, according to the investigators, Craig had been refusing to give a DNA sample or even a urine sample after he was arrested, so it kind of made him look even more suspicious than he already was. The investigation is still ongoing at this point, but Craig is currently facing second-degree murder, first-degree manslaughter, and 2 counts of contempt of court. However, to my knowledge, he has not admitted to anything. He has not confessed. Everything is still kind of up in the air. Now, speaking about Heather belonged to a big, tight-knit family. She also has a daughter, she has 7 siblings, she is close with her parents, and she has a ton of family and friends. Everyone who knew her described her as witty, loving, bright. Her family has set up a GoFundMe to help cover not only the funeral costs, but also costs to help now raise Heather's daughter without her. It is horrible, and it's just another case of domestic disputes that it just goes, you know, so far crazy. And I hope that this monster gets, you know, accountability, justice, all the things for Heather, because this guy is truly disgusting. Now, I know I'm kind of like going off the rails a little here, so I'm going to grab a quick drink of water. I'm going to like recompose myself. We're going to hear from our sponsor and then I'll be back. Okay, guys, we are back, and now I've got to get into this next story because we are going to talk about the Justin Baldoni, Blake Lively of it all. And for those of you who, you know, aren't into this story, don't worry. I'm just going to be doing a very topside summary. But for those of you who do want the deep dive and you want me to like do a full episode dedicated to this where I go through like all the text messages, the screenshots, all that stuff, definitely let me know. So I'm sure that whether you've been following this or not, this lawsuit and complaint has been flooding your social media pages. But let's talk about everything going down between Blake and Justin, because there is a lot. Now, just to recap, as you might already know, Blake had been receiving a ton of backlash from that movie, It Ends With Us, not just about her acting or the wardrobe in it, but more so because of her, what people were calling very rude interviews and sort of her lack of compassion when it came to talking about the film's central message, which is domestic disputes. It is abuse, violence, emotional, all of those things. So it seemed, at least on social media, like Blake during all of this promotion was more so focused on emphasizing her hair products, the clothing she was wearing, over, you know, the whole part of the movie that really matters and the film's, you know, central message, which is violence and how to get out of dangerous relationships and ending the cycle of different forms of abuse. Now, of course, we know how social media works, but basically there was this like whole hate train dumping on Blake Lively. People were pulling old interview clips of her being rude during the movie's press tour, things from years back, former press tours of other movies. So again, if you've been following it, you know what I'm talking about. So while she was getting all of this hate for the movie It Ends With Us on this press tour, her co-star, Justin Baldoni, was kind of off doing his own press tour, separate from the rest of the cast. And I gotta say, by all appearances, he was like killing it. He was getting so much praise from the media, and he was placing in his interviews so much emphasis on the issue at hand, the domestic issue that is, you know, again, central to the film, these dangerous relationships. And so everybody was kind of just like, this guy is so amazing. He's actually promoting this film the right way. He's talking about the serious issues. And the public really took his side in all of this and just further kind of started dumping more and more on Blake. So this is where things started going back and forth, because now it seems Blake and Justin are kind of in like a full-on war, and there's multiple legal complaints and lawsuits that are going on. I want to start with Blake. So as the whole public was basically on Justin's side, on December 20th, a bomb dropped and everybody was kind of shocked, myself included. If you follow me on Instagram at @AnnieElise, you know what I'm talking about because I made a few videos. But Blake filed a legal complaint against Justin Baldoni and against others, saying that she had been sexually harassed as well as mistreated while she was on the set. And that wasn't all. She also claimed that Justin, along his team, created a very calculated smear campaign all to ruin her reputation. Blake said that Justin, who didn't just star but also directed and produced this film, was disturbing, unprofessional, created a hostile work environment. And the complaint, like I said, wasn't just against Justin, it was also against Justin's production company, Wayfair Studios. Also named in the complaint is an independent contractor and publicist who allegedly helped in this smear campaign against Blake. So in her complaint, she says, "I hope that my legal action helps pull back the curtain on these sinister retaliatory tactics to harm people who speak up about misconduct and helps protect others who might be targeted." So some specifics, some of the things that Blake talks about in her complaint are definitely, I have to say, not something that you would ever want to deal with on a movie set. If these allegations were true, it is pretty wild. She alleged that Justin would show her nude videos of women, including his wife, that he would talk about porn and his addiction to that material. He would talk about sex all the time. He allegedly would improvise kissing scenes that were not agreed on in the initial script and what was, you know, signed off on. He allegedly talked about her weight a lot. He would speak about Blake's dead father and claim that he was speaking to Blake's dead father. He would allegedly add new sex scenes to the movie where he would require her to, like, fake an orgasm very clearly. And he would ask her, you know, have you ever watched adult content or porn or anything like that? Like, do you know how people orgasm? Like, just really, like, some unsettling, like, gross things. Apparently, he also would, like, go into her trailer and just start, like, weeping and crying while they were alone, just making her feel very uncomfortable. And the list goes on, and it is very detailed. So if you want to read her whole 80-page complaint, you definitely can. But the gist of it was, like, she had this whole return-to-work requirement list, which was, I think, 17 things exactly, where it said, no more of this, no more of this, all kind of what I just outlined above. And he signed off on it, the team signed off on it, and then they resumed working together. This was coming back from the strike. So I'll be honest, when I first read this, which I was always kind of like, I wasn't on Team Blake or Team Justin, but I thought her promotion of the film was very off-putting. That's just my personal opinion. So then when I saw this complaint, I was like, wow, okay, like, not does the promotion doesn't make sense. Well, it kind of does. Let me get there. But I was like, this guy seems like scum. Like, and if they're putting this whole, like, return to work restriction saying no more of this, no more of that, and Justin and the team are signing off on it, to me, that kind of proves in a sense of, like, okay, that was happening on the set. If you're signing that there will be no more of something, that's indicative that there was that to begin with, right? Also, there were parts in this complaint which outlined that from, I think it was from Sony Pictures, but don't quote me on that, but there was a strict guideline as to how the film needed to be promoted. Like, and I'm talking so black and white, where they went as far as saying, you know, don't focus on the abuse, focus on the survival, focus on the uplifting elements, focus on going to the movie with your friends, all of these things, which that's, in fairness, how Blake was promoting the film. She was doing what was literally listed black and white, required to do so. So after reading this, a lot of the public, myself included, kind of started to be like, wow, what really is the truth here? If this is all real, like, this guy is kind of a dirtbag, right? Because also in the lawsuit were screenshots of text messages about the alleged smear campaign that they were planning against Blake. According to her complaint, Justin's team was using, quote, social manipulation to absolutely destroy Blake's reputation. There were screenshots in this complaint which had text messages that talked about, you know, quote, burying Blake, saying how they're capable of ruining her in the public eye. They just can't put it in writing. There was also a screenshot of Justin referencing Hailey Bieber saying, this is what we would need. I mean, I guess it was talking about how badly Hailey's reputation had been ruined and he wants to do that to Blake. So anyway, it was like the public tide was starting to really sway in Blake's favor when all this was going down. And like I said, I won't explain the entire 80-page complaint, but you guys get the gist. So one day after Blake filed the complaint, the New York Times wrote a story on it, and they titled it, "We Can Bury Anyone Inside a Hollywood Smear Machine." In addition to the New York Times article, a lot of celebrities also came forward supporting Blake. Her whole cast from the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants franchise spoke out saying they were standing with Blake. Colleen Hoover, the author of the book, It Ends With Us, also came out in support of Blake. So did co-stars from the movie. Jenny Slate came forward. Brandon Skelnar, I think that's how you pronounce it, he came forward. So it seemed like the tide was shifting, that it was shifting into Blake's favor. Like, Blake was exposing everything, closing in on this whole thing. But then, boom, a bomb drops, because Justin counters back, not by making any public comments, but by filing a lawsuit of his own. To be exact, a $250 million lawsuit that he filed against the New York Times. He's suing them for libel and for other claims. Now, his lawsuit goes directly against the majority of the claims that Blake listed in her complaint, and also some of the sexual harassment accusations. He also, in his lawsuit, brought his own screenshots. The screenshots included text messages between him and Blake, even including one where Blake was inviting Justin to her trailer to discuss parts of the film while she was breastfeeding, which was very interesting because one of her return to work line items was, no more entering my trailer while I'm breastfeeding or nude. I'm paraphrasing there. So then he fires back and he's like, here's a text message where you literally say, hey, I'm breastfeeding right now or I'm pumping right now. Come on in. Let's talk about it. So he also was denying the accusations of showing her the adult material, the photos, the videos, all of those things. The lawsuit also talks about that smear campaign, the one that looked very clear from the documents that it was, you know, fully like planned and executed. Now, Justin said that when Blake felt like his team was creating a smear campaign on Blake, he felt like Blake was the one doing that to him. He even talked about how originally he wasn't even going to be allowed to attend the movie premiere because Blake didn't want him there and she didn't want anyone from his production company there. He claims that he was, quote, segregated from the entire cast. And he goes on again with like kind of a laundry list of things, talking about how she was insistent that she got editing rights on the film, even though that's something that a cast member would never have. But like she wanted to have her own director's cut, then so much so that they took it to, what do you call it, focus groups or audiences to have them watch Justin's cut and Blake's cut. And while the audience all preferred Justin's cut, she apparently made such a stink about it that hers is the one that got released. She demanded that he be removed from the movie poster, which he is. It's only her on the movie poster. I mean, there were a lot of things. And again, I'm trying to keep it more high level because I know not all of you will be interested in this. But if you want the deep dive into this, let me know because it is definitely fascinating. But he was coming with a lot of the receipts, even putting full screen grabs of text messages where the ones that were shown and, you know, the images in her complaint were kind of not altered, but there were certain, like the whole thread wasn't included, where in his, he included the whole thread. So you had more context to it. So now you can imagine, because there was already so much kind of, you know, anger and hate towards Blake before she filed her complaint, now the tide was turning back in Justin's favor and people like, oh, she is really the monster we all thought she was. So much so that even just the last couple of days, there have been more allegations coming out where, you know, people are going to sleuth all they want and try to find information. But like Deadpool, which was being filmed simultaneously as It Ends With Us, and Deadpool is the movie that stars her husband, Ryan Reynolds. There's a scene that one scene was left in the movie and one was edited out, but it's now circulating online, where there's a character called Nicepool, and I don't know superhero movies, guys. I go with my husband, but I think there's like different multi-universes and like different characters live in these universes, so they're all a variation of each other. I don't know, but anyway, this Nicepool, people are suggesting, was based on Justin Baldoni because he has a man bun in his hair, which Justin famously had. Ryan Reynolds, as Nicepool, makes a comment saying how he's going to have a podcast that is centered around female rights and advocacy that he can monetize, like almost kind of taking a dig, which Justin has a podcast that is similar to that. There's a few other things that this Deadpool Nicepool character says where they feel like it really was, you know, because Ryan was so heavily involved in writing Deadpool, that he was doing that to like jab Justin. There's even a scene in which the Deadpool character talks about how there it's so important that there's an intimacy coordinator on set. That's literally in the Deadpool movie, where one of Blake's biggest complaints was that there was no intimacy coordinator, and that's why things were so perverse and why there was sexual harassment and all of those things, which, by the way, in Justin's counter lawsuit, he put a screenshot of a text thread with Blake where he says, hey, the intimacy coordinator is ready to start. Where do you want to meet with her? This and that. And she says, oh, no, I don't need to meet with her. Like, it's fine, or something to that degree, to where it's like there was proof that there was an intimacy coordinator. So like everybody's kind of like going back and forth, right? And it's been a lot to keep up with. And the public opinion just keeps swaying side to side. But social media is just going wild. Justin's lawyer also released a statement saying that Justin will be personally suing Blake very soon. So watching this whole thing play out is definitely going to be interesting. I think it's also interesting that I watched the Golden Globes this last weekend, and it seemed like there were two moments in which presenters and award acceptees kind of alluded to the drama. One was, and I'm sorry, please don't come for me, I don't know his name, I don't know what the film was that won, but he's giving his acceptance speech, and at the very end he says something, again just paraphrasing here, to the point of director's cut should always be the cut that goes into theaters and that is released. It should always be that way. Filmmakers have a way of knowing how a film should look, be portrayed, all of those things. So people thought that that was a dig at Blake because she was so hell-bent, apparently, on having her own cut and having editing rights and then getting an editor's credit or a director's credit, I should say. And her version is the one that ultimately got released as well, because according to Justin, he didn't want to halt. He felt like the story needed to be told. He didn't want to halt production. He didn't want to halt the release. So he just like kind of went with it, knowing that like Blake and Ryan are these powerhouses that could literally like stall everything, destroy everything, tie things up with money, all of those things. So that was one instance from the Golden Globes. Then there was, who was it? It was Mindy Kaling and, why do I want to say Kate Hudson? I don't think it was Kate Hudson. But there were two people who were presenting, and they also make like a little mention about, I think they, the first words they say when they were presenting is, it begins with us, or begins with, or like there was some other context in there. So people are now suggesting, which again, this is just social media, take it with a grain of salt, but they're suggesting that Hollywood is siding with Justin on this, not Blake and Ryan, and that even more than that, that's the reason why Blake and Ryan didn't even go to the Golden Globes. They were supposed to, but didn't go. So I don't know. This is a case where you're definitely going to have to do your own research, read each of their complaints and lawsuits, watch the whole thing play out, and make a decision on who you want to believe or what you believe. But again, if you want the deep dive, let me know. I know that was very like topical, but I didn't want to keep you here all day. But I definitely can if you want me to. All right, so let's move into another headline case. And we were going to talk about it last week, but there was still information pouring in, and so I wanted to wait a little bit. But now we're going to talk about the just absolutely devastating New Year's Day terror attack that killed and injured dozens of people. It was early New Year's Day in the French Quarter of New Orleans, and people were celebrating the New Year when they were completely shocked when this man just intentionally drove a truck into the crowd. The truck was on some sort of absolute just deadly rampage, and the driver began plowing people, killing at least 14 people.
It was a great time. Until it wasn't.
You hear a loud noise, it goes boom, boom, boom. And then we looked to our left, and all I saw was a truck coming towards me with no lights on. It was just running people over like they were nothing.
The truck drove up to the barriers on Bourbon Street and then started weaving around the barriers, clearly trying to hit as many people as possible. Now, eventually, the driver crashed the truck, and when he got out, he started opening fire on the responding police officers. Then, after a shootout with the police, he was shot and was pronounced dead at the scene. Two police officers were also hit by gunfire, but they were treated at the hospital, thankfully. But here's where things get interesting and why I kind of wanted to wait until more information came out, because it still is coming out, but now we have more. But the attacker was identified as 42-year-old Shamsund Dean Jabbar. He was a U.S. Army vet who lived in Houston, Texas, and while no terrorist groups have officially come forward claiming responsibility for the attack, he did post several videos saying that he supported ISIS. The FBI is calling it an act of terrorism, but believes that nobody else is involved. And in the truck, police found guns and two IEDs, which are explosive devices. They also found a transmitter that was meant to trigger the bombs. So after bomb technicians swept the area, they also found two more IEDs in coolers around the area. Security footage even caught him placing these bombs in these coolers earlier in the evening. He was also wearing body armor to protect himself. So because of this, there is a theory that he set those bombs in the coolers so that they would go off at a certain time and create even more destruction, more damage, but that for some reason, the bombs didn't go off. And because of that, that's what prompted him to start driving his truck into the crowd. Because one of the biggest questions was, why at 3 o'clock in the morning, when the streets are now still busy, but like way emptier than they would be at midnight, why is he choosing to drive into the crowd? So people are suggesting, and again, this is just suggestion, so do your own research, but they're suggesting that he had planted the cooler bombs, hoping that that would create the mass destruction. But then after realizing they didn't go off for whatever reason, that they were faulty, whatever happened, that's when he decided the next best thing to cause mass destruction would be to get behind my vehicle and drive it into the crowd. FBI investigators also checked out the Airbnb that he was staying in, and they found out that the building had caught on fire, so there's an additional investigation looking into what started that fire. They also searched his home in Houston, and they found more bomb-making materials. Now, because so many people were killed, police are still working to perform all of the autopsies and identify all of the victims and, of course, notify all of the families. But a lot of these victims were college students, high school students, fathers, children, so it's just so sad and like I don't know the word anymore, like defeating, I guess, when you realize that 14 families are now forced to prepare for funerals. The coroner's office is working to identify all of the victims, but so far the youngest victim that's listed is 18 years old, and the oldest is 63. As I said, most of the victims were in their 20s, so it's so sad to think that, like, these people who had their entire lives ahead of them, who were just together celebrating the new year, were just, their lives were lost, you know, in a split second. One of the victims was an 18-year-old girl named Nikaira Cheyenne Dido. Her mother shared in a post on Facebook, quote, "My baby is gone. She's no longer with us." And her mom originally said that she had told her daughter she wasn't allowed to go out, but apparently she snuck out anyway to go have fun on New Year's. Another one of the victims was also 18 years old. His name was Kareem Badawi, and he had just finished his first semester at the University of Alabama. Kareem's father gave him permission to go out to New Orleans with his friends so that he could, you know, ring in the new year, but of course now is devastated not knowing that he was going to lose his son by allowing him to do that. Nicole Perez was a 27-year-old single mother who was also killed in the attack. She had just received a promotion at work, and things were finally looking up for her and her 5-year-old son. She was just there celebrating, ringing in the new year. One of her coworkers remembers speaking to her, and Nicole was saying how excited she was that she was going to go and see the fireworks. Those are just a few of the victims who lost their lives, and there are so many more. It's just very, very sad. On Saturday, New Orleans hosted a vigil to mourn all of the lives that were lost, and at the memorial, there are crosses, there are teddy bears, flowers, even a brass band who's playing to pay tribute. Relatives, friends, and family all just held each other and cried. It's amazing when you see the love and support of the community come together, but of course nothing can make up for what's been lost. It's just, it's very devastating. Now I want to talk about Ash Trevino, because this is the one I was telling you at the top of this episode everybody has been asking me to cover, and I just want to quickly touch on the enigma of Ashley Trevino. I won't get down the whole rabbit hole because there really is so much backstory, history, and what do the kids say? Lore, I think is the word. It's really hard to keep up. I mean, so much going on. But let's just start by saying this woman is going viral on TikTok right now, and for all of the wrong reasons. She's a 35-year-old woman from Texas, and one of her nicknames is actually the Inmate Hopper. So yeah, this woman kind of has made like a little image of herself for dating prisoners. She dates them, she talks to them, she sends them money in prison, and one of these prisoners is actually convicted of murdering teenage girls. And by the way, let me mention, she's a mother. She has daughters, daughters that are the same age as the one that this convict supposedly killed. It's just crazy. Now, one of the stories that she went viral for is for saying that she was, quote, dating this guy from prison. Then, the day that he got out, she booked a hotel room for them. Now, she apparently had to book a hotel room and couldn't invite him over to her house because she still lives at her parents' house, supposedly. But she booked this hotel room for them, and then a week later, he dumped her. And apparently the reason, I can't help but laugh, but apparently the reason he dumped her was because she didn't look like what he thought she was going to look like. I don't know if she was, you know, face-tuning herself when she was talking to him when he was in prison, or what the situation is, but he went to the hotel room, got with her, and then said, no, you don't even look like what I thought you were gonna look like, so I'm out. Now, she also went viral because she goes on TikTok live all of the time, and she acts kind of just insane. I mean, sometimes she'll have her, quote, prison boyfriends on speakerphone when she's going live, and she'll say things like they're innocent, she'll make fun of the victims even, and while she's on the phone with her prisoner boyfriend. She also has even gone on live and, like, masturbated on camera, which is so disgusting and disturbing. And if you could see my face right now, you'd see it makes I like look like the emoji that's about to barf. But more than all of that sketchy, weird behavior, Ashley has a long, long history with CPS. Now, this is also something that she openly will talk about in her TikToks. There's one video of her even saying, "Yes, I've had like 20 CPS cases, but they all get dismissed because my kids are in good hands." And if you just type the search Ashley Trevino on TikTok or even on YouTube, you will find videos that go on and on with like just clips of all of her tangents. But here are a couple key examples.
"Kids. Yes, I've had like 20 CPS cases. They dismissed them all because you know why? My kids are in good hands. My kids are taken care of. My kids do not need, they don't want for No, she's seen that video that guy posted saying that he has a successful open case on me. She's like, Mom, they opened another case. I said, don't worry about it, bro. Like, they're going to continue to keep opening cases and opening cases and opening cases. And you know what? God continues to close the cases. He continues to close the cases. I don't fear no man, nobody but God. He's the only person I fear. So you want to try and do what you're going to do? Go for it, baby boy. Oh, not baby boy. You're an old man. Go for it, old man. Go for it, viejito. And y'all are really trying to get my kids taken from me, and it's not going to happen. Do you know how many CPS cases I've had on me in the last 4 months, and I still have custody of my kids? Like, you do understand when you call CPS, you have to have actual proof that they're in an unfit condition, right? Like, you really have to have proof that my kids are really being not taken care of. You do understand that, right? For those of y'all that love to call CPS on me, y'all do understand. You have to have proof that my kids are in harm's way. My kids are this, my kids are that, y'all really have to have proof.
Now, Ashley's children were apparently not raised by Ashley, but by Ashley's mother. And Ashley will often go on these live streams saying how she's just going to send her daughters to go be watched by her parents so that she can be with all of her prison boyfriends and she can be hooking up with all of them. There's even one video where she's like literally talking on live and she receives a text message from her daughter where her daughter says, Mommy, can I come over tonight and just spend the night with you? And she just starts laughing and then puts the phone down, not even responding to her daughter. It's like, how cruel are you? It's no wonder that the internet is up in arms. So now she supposedly is dating a 19-year-old guy. And like I said, it's a lot to keep track of. But this new guy, his name is Santos. And at first, Ashley said that he was 22 years old, but he's actually 19 years old. Now, the two of them have gone back and forth with allegations saying that he had sexually assaulted her. Then he came back and said that she's the one who assaulted him. And they've kind of done like this series of insane out-of-pocket things where they're blaming each other. She's buying him alcohol. He's underage. She was live streaming while they were all drinking when the police came, or was it the police or CPS? I can't even remember now. Came while she was live streaming because she was serving underage people alcohol. It's just wild. And like I said, there is a whole rabbit hole that comes with Ashley. I could go on and on about all of the things that are coming out about this woman, but everybody's main concern is the children, of course, right? The fact that there's been 20 CPS cases on her, that she's neglecting them on camera and, you know, not concerned at all with actually being a good mother. The fact that she's dating inmates who have allegedly murdered children her own, like the same age as her own children. And then when they get out, she's inviting them to come near her children. It's very, very alarming. She also has allegedly made racist comments. She, like I said, has made fun of victims in crimes that her supposed boyfriends have committed. And she just spends all day, every day on these live streams, just sitting there talking, eating hot Cheetos, not taking care of her daughters. I mean, it's weird, weird, weird. So as I said, everything right now is, of course, alleged. She has not been charged with committing any crimes yet, but a lot of the public is concerned for the safety of her kids, and I think that is warranted. I absolutely do. I'm going to keep following this to see if any charges come, but if you, again, kind of like the Blake Lively thing, if you want a deep dive in this, even though I know it's different than our normal content, let me know, because I like to give you the content you want, so let me know what you want. All right, other than that, on Friday, we are putting out another ad-free bonus episode. It is a mini deep dive into a case that is going on right now. It is a current case. It is still being investigated. It's about a toxic relationship, drunk makeup sex. It ends in murder. There's still no body. It's very, very interesting. So we're talking about that Friday. You can get access to that either on Apple Podcasts or through Patreon. That's the only two places where it lives. But if you want to do that because you do feel like you need more content to binge, you will unlock about 70 bonus episodes when you do that, when you sign up. So we put one out every single Friday, and right now there's a backlog of about 70. So you will have plenty of deep dives to listen to. And then, of course, I'll be back on Monday with a brand new deep dive into a case that, once again, it is true crime related, but I have been tagged in it over 500 times. Literally, that's not an exaggeration. Over 500 times. So that deep dive that you have all been asking for is coming on Monday, so don't miss that. And if you want to make sure you don't miss any of those things, take a quick second. If you are listening on the podcast app, find the little button in the corner where you can follow the podcast. That way you won't miss any new episodes. Again, it's totally free. And if you are watching this episode on YouTube, since we are putting it on there now, hit subscribe on the channel. Again, totally free. And that way you will not miss any of these updates or the deep dives that I just mentioned. All right, guys, thank you so much for tuning in. Be safe, be nice, don't kill anybody, just get a divorce, don't join any cults, and just try to be a good human. We're all doing our best, right? All right, I will be back on the mic with you very soon. Until then, stay safe. Bye.